SEC fans, this is John Chris from Saturday Down South. Welcome to another installment of the SDS Podcast. Come to you from the iHeartMedia Studio, WDAE in Tampa, Florida, 620 AM and 95.3 FM. Be sure to follow me on Twitter, at SaturdayJC. Our guest for this episode is Matt Hinton. He's a writer and self-described college football obsessive. You've seen his work at places like Grantland and CBS Sports and the Dr. Saturday blog at Yahoo Sports, not to mention right here at SDS. Fortunately, he's going to be contributing a couple columns a week once again. Really looking forward to that. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt R. Hinton. Matt, thanks for joining us, and it's great to have you part of the team again.
Yeah, great to be here.
Okay, before we get started, the Saturday Down South podcast is brought to you by our friends at Ticket City. College football is on the way very quickly. Some incredible SEC matchups on the way. Alabama, Florida State, Michigan, Florida, Georgia, Notre Dame. Now's the time to get your tickets. We've been working with Ticket City for a long time. They are the experts in the field. They've served over 1.5 million customers, and they're the place to go to get your tickets for these high-demand games. 30 years in the industry. Now they're offering $20 off for all of our podcast listeners. All you have to do, go to TicketCity.com, enter the discount code SDS20 at checkout, and you're going to get $20 off of your order. Again, that's TicketCity.com, discount code SDS20. And now Matt Hinton. Matt, I was a fan of your work even before you kind of became a part of the team. I appreciate you spending the 2017 campaign with us and offering your unique brand of coverage.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great year and certainly a great start to the year. I think this year matches last year, which was, you know, the greatest opening weekend ever, which I think it kind of lived up to that. I think this year is setting up the same way.
Yeah, I think so as well. Before we get too deep into the pigskin talk, as I mentioned in the intro, you are an alum of the now defunct Grantland. I know a lot of people like to sort of pour one out for that and were very upset when the website closed shop a while back. I'm just curious about your experience with the title. I think especially for people in the industry, people who work in sports journalism, entertainment, and other fields, it really was a cause that we enjoyed and we championed because it really did coverage the right way. It was the type of content that not only is a joy to produce, but also a joy to consume. And it really was a shame it sort of went away. But what was your experience with Grantland being a part of that staff for a while?
Well, I think it was just like what it looked like from the outside. I mean, it really was in a lot of ways a dream scenario, you know, that you were able to come to it with your own voice, your own perspective. You know, they were comfortable going in whatever direction you wanted to go. You know, I tend more towards the hardcore football strategy and analysis, and they were fine with that. You know, I was able to do that, but I was also able to, you know, open up my writing a little bit and towards more features and longer articles and things that were more into the culture than than just the X's and O's and the gridiron stuff. You know, they were open to all of that. You know, there was no pushback over traffic or anything like that. So it was very, you know, Grantland was not a, it was a cultural, you know, it was really kind of came out of the things that Bill Simmons is interested in, and he is sort of famously not very interested in college football. And so it was not really a site that was necessarily geared toward the sport. I mean, it's a lot more towards pro sports, really. But, you know, they were still very, I thought, very accommodating and really was it was a great scenario, an ideal scenario for a writer in a lot of ways, and I think everybody who wrote for them would say the same thing.
Now, you mentioned Bill Simmons. This was originally his brainchild. He's really become a giant in the field and quite a controversial guy the way he goes about his business. His motive has always been that content is king and that advertising doesn't matter and clicks don't matter, and there should be a place out there for just having the best content, and if you have it, people will find it. And I think that he did that with Grantland. I don't know if the bottom line necessarily reflected that, and he's moved over to The Ringer now, hasn't quite gotten the same traffic, hasn't quite made the same splash that Grantland has. It's not automatic in smart football fans' daily reads. So just in the end, do you think Bill Simmons is right about this and that the best content itself is truly what matters? Or if you're going to make a dime in this business and be sustainable, do you have to, quote, pivot to video? Do you have to do pop-up ads? Do you have to do top 10 lists and scroll through picture galleries and things like that because they're cheaper to produce and easy to get a lot of clicks that help the bottom line?
I don't know. I think if I had an answer to that, I would have a lot more money than I do. I mean, right now, I don't know. I think everyone right now is kind of asking themselves, what is the answer? I don't think that pivoting to video and pop-up ads is the answer. People do not like that. They don't. They obviously don't. You know, they just don't enjoy that. And I think, to me, that's always detrimental to sites that lean too heavily on those things. It obviously is very hard for the content is king model. I mean, I would certainly like that to be true. That's certainly what I like. I mean, you know, I gravitate towards sites that have that sensibility. It's why I love Grantland so much and why so many people did, but, you know, obviously not enough people to keep it alive. So, and with The Ringer right now, I mean, I can't speak to the traffic, but, you know, it seems to me to be pretty close to what Grantland was. I am rooting for them. I want to see them make it. I'm rooting very hard for Stuart Mandel's new site, The Athletic, to see them make it. You know, they're going to go the subscription model with no ads, none of the stuff that people hate. So I really would love to see that to succeed just to prove that it can. I mean, to me, the reason that people are pivoting to video is because they just don't have any other answers right now, and somebody has convinced them, well, you know, advertisers will pay more for pre-roll autoplay video. But that, you know, that can't last because people don't like that. People are not going to gravitate toward that. So, I don't know what the answer to that is right now. I think eventually in the long run, there's always going to be good content. People will gravitate toward good content. There has to be an answer to get them to pay for it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That has been for the last 20 years, that's been the big, you know, overriding question, and nobody's found an answer for it yet. So, you know, I certainly don't have one.
Nobody has, but I'm also a big fan of The Athletic and what they're trying to do. I think it's incredibly gutsy. It's a 180 spin from what a lot of people are trying to do in this industry. And frankly, I just have friends there. The site in Chicago in particular, I know some people. So if a pay site like The Athletic does well, I think that's good for the industry as a whole, whether you're writing for free sites like Saturday Down South or The Athletic that are expecting subscriptions to help pay the bills. All right, let's get out of the business and talk actual gridiron, of course. Just your general feelings on the SEC East this season. You're going to be doing some very broad previews at Saturday Down South for the entire conference. But one of the prevailing conversations for several years now is just a general imbalance between the bully, which is the West, and the kid brother, which is the East. Is there any reason to believe that imbalance will get a little more 50-50 this year based on your look at the seven programs in each division?
No. I think that, just looking at the teams coming into the year, the balance looks to be about what it has been the past few years, which is still very, very heavily tilted toward the West. If you ask me the three best teams going into the season again, I'd probably say Alabama, Auburn, LSU. Depending on how the new offense coordinator fits in at LSU, which we may get to later. The one team that I think has a chance to really kind of upset that would be Georgia. Just because I like Georgia so much on paper, just looking at their roster, they're talented. They're always talented. But this is the year where they Jacob Eason is moving up as a sophomore now. He's going to be more comfortable. You expect him to make that leap from year one to year two that a five-star quarterback makes, like Matt Stafford made. Obviously the backfield is deep with not just Chubb and Michelle, but they also have a new five-star running back coming in, a freshman, you know, young receivers coming up. I think the offensive line has to be better than it was last year. you know, the great recruiting class coming in. This Georgia really has the look of a team that in the second year of a new coach can make that leaps that you see teams make. I mean, you know, obviously the prominent example that comes to mind is the leap that Alabama made from year one under Saban to year two. Kirby Smart was a part of that, and from 07 to 08, where they went from mediocre to just dominant within a year. Now, that's, you know, that doesn't happen very often, but Georgia is in a position this year where if they're not necessarily going to be like a championship, like a national championship or a playoff contender, they can kind of put themselves in a position where they are going to beat that program, you know, over the next few years. They can put themselves in a position where, you know, 2018, 2019, they're on that level. All that being said, that's looking at them on paper. You know, as soon as I look at that first game against Appalachian State, I think, do I really trust them in that game? I mean, I think about what Appalachian State did to Tennessee last year when they should have, you know, went into Tennessee and should have won that game. I think that's going to tell us a lot about Georgia, whether they come out and really dominate out of the gate and really kind of show that they are making that progress, or, you know, whether they struggle. I mean, I look at that game and I think, man, that's going to be a four-quarter game for them. Do I really trust them? And I think that's going to tell a lot about the rest of the season for Georgia, how they handle that opener.
Now, a ubiquitous question that's sort of asked all over college football, whether it's people in the industry like ourselves or just, you know, buddies at the bar, you know, having an adult beverage, is who's the best conference in college football? And it's clearly more of a conversation now than maybe it was 4 or 5 years ago. There's a prevailing sentiment outside the southeastern part of the United States that the SEC is basically Alabama and everybody else. When I get asked that question, my answer tends to be, yes, I think the ACC has an argument at the top of the conference with Clemson coming off a national championship and Florida State looking positively loaded. I think that the Big Ten has an argument at the top of the conference. Ohio State might go undefeated into the college football playoff. Penn State is clearly doing great things with Coach Franklin. And Michigan, obviously, in the right direction with Jim Harbaugh. But I still think, for my money, the SEC is as deep as it goes, 1 through 14, in that there are just no layup games in the conference. And because that there really are no cupcakes, there isn't a Rutgers you have to play. There isn't a Wake Forest you have to play. I still believe the SEC is superior 1 through 14. So when you get asked that question, how do you tend to answer it?
Well, my answer has always been, I feel that the conferences, I've always felt that the major conferences are all, from one year to the next, pretty much even. Like, within a given season, you always have, you know, every conference has strong teams, mediocre teams, terrible teams. I think over time, what separates the SEC is that even the teams at the bottom of the SEC have had their runs. Even the teams at the bottom of the SEC have had some success. You know, they recruit, you know, Mississippi State and Kentucky and Missouri, and those teams you think as, you know, not being the powerhouses in the SEC, they still have had big years. Kentucky maybe not big, but they've had years where at least they're going to bowl games. They're not like, you know, Illinois or you know, Purdue, which is, they're just going to have a losing record every year. You know, every team in the SEC at some point recently, I mean very recently, has been respectable, has been good, and has been able to, you know, be a respectable program. And I think that's true even of, you know, Vanderbilt, which was in a bowl game last year, Kentucky. You know, all of those teams have been, you know, been competitive and been formidable within very recent history. That's not true in every other conference. So from one year to the next, you know, last year it was true that the SEC was just Alabama and everybody else. I mean, there was just a huge gap between Alabama and the rest of the conference. Nobody else was able to, you know, was able to contend or challenge with them, which, you know, has not always been true. But I think what's different about the SEC is that over time, every team in the conference has been respectable and has been competitive. And I think in other conferences, you know, you just don't have the same team in the basement every single year. You've had that, you know, with Vanderbilt for a long time, but that's not really true anymore.
You mentioned the Bulldogs earlier. I want to bring it back to Athens, and I'm feeling the same way you do. On paper, clearly the best team. A five-star quarterback in Jacob Eason should improve from year one to year two. Sony Michel, Nick Chubb back at the running back position. The offensive line can't be any worse. The receiver position can't be any worse. 10 of 11 returning starters on defense, a number three recruiting class in the country, fairly favorable schedule. But I'm like you. I have trust issues with this team. I don't know if I have a great way of explaining them, but when I was at Media Days last month, I had Georgia atop my ballot, and I didn't feel very good about it. I felt a lot more confident in Tennessee a year ago, and we saw how that went. So where did these trust issues come from? Is it Coach Smart only in year two? Is it just Georgia's history of sort of disappointing us? Where exactly does that come from between the hedges?
Oh, well, I think it's history. I mean, Georgia has not been competitive. I mean, nationally competitive, really. Really in the past, the past decade? I mean, the last conference title they won was 05. They've only, played for one since then, I think, in 12 or two. And also in 11 and 12. But, you know, in 11, they weren't really like a national contender. It's just been a long time. And to me, the fact that I have more confidence in the fact that it's Kirby Smart's second season. I like coaches that are kind of in the first term. I like coaches that are, I think that when you look at the most successful programs now for the past 15 years, 20 years, teams that really get there, that are really nationally relevant, get there really fast. When a new coach comes in, it's 2, 3, 4 years. You know, they have that very early success. And they may sustain it after that, but if you're not a winner, a big winner by year three, by year four at a place like Georgia, it's probably not going to happen there. I mean, you know, the program that you have within 3 or 4 years is probably the program you're going to have for the rest of your tenure. You don't see guys turning it around in year five and year six and suddenly start winning championships who have not won championships before at programs like Georgia. So I feel like this is the year, if it's going to happen, that we're going to start to see it. Like, it's going to be clear this year the direction, you know, is Georgia going to be really relevant? Are they going to pay off all this momentum that they have, a new coach, obvious talent, great recruiting class? You know, is that going to start to pay off this year where it has not paid off, you know, over the last 12 years? So, I mean, I think that's the issue with them. And, you know, last year they lost games to Vanderbilt. they barely beat Kentucky.
They barely beat Nickel State.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, they just did not play up to their potential last year. They lost to Missouri. They got blown out by Ole Miss. They just weren't as good last year as they should have been. I mean, even though it was his first year and they had a freshman quarterback and all that, they underachieved. And that's not the first time we've seen Georgia underachieve. So, I mean, that's just, are they going to play up to their potential where they haven't before? I have more confidence that they can do that, you know, in year two of a new coach than in year 8 or 9. But it's the same question that people have had for Georgia for the past, you know, 10 years.
You know, I've never heard anybody make that first term argument before, but it makes a lot of sense. It really does. I mean, just think about Coach Stoops at Oklahoma. I think he won a title in his second year and never was able to match that with the Sooners. But let's keep it in the East. You know, the Blue Bloods, quote unquote, however you want to call them, Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. There's a lot of people on Rocky Top hearing your first term argument and not feeling very good about it with Coach Jones. But let's move on to the other four programs. You can say Kentucky is on the rise, gets back to a bowl game, recruiting going pretty well. South Carolina, on the rise, unexpectedly made a bowl game last year. Year one for Coach Muschamp, recruiting going okay. Even Vanderbilt made a bowl last year, which Coach Mason, for the first time. I know that the Commodores have their struggles, you know, being a black sheep, small private school in the SEC full of big, you know, big state schools with infinite money and more focus on football, but things are going okay there. And even Missouri, I know last year or two has been very difficult, but there is some talent on that roster, could score a lot of points in that offense. I don't know if they'll scare anybody. Of one of those four teams, if one of them is going to break through and potentially shake up the East and maybe even make a run at Atlanta, your money's on who?
Well, I have said Kentucky. I think, you know, I don't know if I can really envision Kentucky winning that division. I don't know that they have the talent, but I do think, just looking at Kentucky, that this is the best team they've had since, you know, I guess the 07 team with Andre Woodson that spent some time in the top 10, which is the last time any, you know, Kentucky has been, or the only time Kentucky has been really relevant for a very long time. I think this team is the best they've had in a long time. And if there is a year that they have a shot to maybe knock off one or two of those, you know, the big three in that division, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, I think this is probably the year that that's going to happen. You know, they turned, last year was such a turnaround for them. I mean, after their first two games, they blew the huge lead against Southern Miss. They got destroyed by Florida. It looked horrible. You know, it just looked like Stoops was done there. I mean, it was a foregone conclusion to me after the second game that he was finished.
And they had to move on to a backup quarterback.
Yeah. They made the change at quarterback. They turned it around. You know, they finished with a winning record, which was a big step forward for them. They were competitive against Georgia. Who did they beat? They beat Louisville at the end of the year. That was, a big kind of a program-defining win, I think, for them to win that game. You know, I just feel like if there's a year that Kentucky can be relevant, this is the chance. And if it's not this year, then maybe never. But I'll also say, you know, I was watching, just kind of randomly watching while doing something else yesterday, the South Carolina-Missouri game from last year, and was very impressed with Jake Bentley. I think that not a lot of people saw him. I didn't see a lot of him last year just because, you know, South Carolina was not really relevant, not really on the radar. But of the freshman quarterbacks, I mean, he really is the guy with a lot of tools. And I think he has a chance to be very, very good and really, really South Carolina can be, maybe not this year, but, going forward, I think that they have a pretty good future with Bentley.
Yeah, those true freshman quarterbacks got a lot of run in the SEC last year. We heard so much about Jalen Hurts for all the obvious reasons, Jacob Eason as well. We got a late glance at Shea Patterson. We like what we see there, but we don't hear Bentley quite as much. And I'm with you. Not only from a tools perspective, he seems to carry himself with the right amount of moxie, and you really need that at the game's most important position. I am high on the Gamecocks this year, but let's go ahead and spin it to the West. A guy I know you've evaluated very closely is Jalen Hurts from Alabama, who I just mentioned. This is a guy who's the reigning offensive SEC player of the year, yet he wasn't asked to do a whole heck of a lot. A lot of throws at or near behind the line of scrimmage and predetermined at best. A lot of shots downfield off of play action and things of that nature. Not a whole lot of traditional intermediate passing game because they ran the ball so well, they played such tough defense, there was no need to take a lot of risks with this guy. So I'm curious how much growth we're going to see from Jalen Hurts. He gets a new coordinator in Brian Daboll. Sarkisian is gone. Kiffin is gone. Are we going to see the same quarterback who just has the splash plays and then tuck it and run, young man, when you need to? Or are we going to see some actual growth in this guy, him resemble more of a traditional pocket passer? If that happens, he might be truly unstoppable, and Alabama's never truly had a quarterback like that with Coach Saban.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting the way that we talk about Hurts is very different, because for most of last year, it was like, you know, wow, this guy is very poised, and he's ahead of his years, and, you know, he's almost a full-fledged quarterback. But then you get to the end of the year, the playoff games, the games against Washington and Clemson were his worst games of the season. I mean, I don't think there's any statistically, as a passer, statistically and just watching him play, you know, he clearly struggled against the best defenses he played, and that was true against LSU too. I mean, his production in those games was way down. Now, that being said, he also, when he walked off the field for the last time, you know, had just scored the go-ahead touchdown in the championship game. And if Alabama's defense failed after that point, then maybe we're not asking Doug Jalen Hurts to get better for them to win a championship, because he'd already have one. My feeling is that he is what we saw last year is who he is. I mean, I think that he is mature. I think that he did come kind of with his I think he's pretty about as polished, I think, as he's going to be. Maybe a little more. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he'll get a little bit more accurate, you know, as the years go on. But I really feel like the Jalen Hurts that we saw last year is the Jalen Hurts that we're going to see throughout his career. I think that's who he is, and I think that that is good enough. I mean, when you look at Alabama's backfield, I mean, how often does he have to throw? The question comes down to when he gets in those big games, is he going to be able to average more than 4 yards per attempt, which is what he averaged last year against Washington Clemson. That's very bad. And really he had the one big throw to O.J. Howard when Howard broke free wide open against Clemson. Other than that, he did not make a throw in either of those games against Washington and Clemson that really stood out or that really was a relevant throw.
And don't forget the Florida game. He didn't. I mean, I know that was a blowout, 54-16, I believe, but he was not exactly sharp throwing the ball because they didn't need him to be. That's the question I have. I think there's improvement to be made, but does this program even need him to truly improve because of the way they play defense, those five tailbacks they have in the backfield? How much more do they really need to ask of this guy? But that brings me back to the offensive coordinator question. As I mentioned, Lane Kiffin is gone. He's now at FAU. Steve Sarkisian followed him out the door. He's now with the Atlanta Falcons. Brian Daboll comes in. He was formerly a tight ends coach of the New England Patriots. However, they're not all of a sudden going back to this 3 yards in a cloud of dust, traditional I formation, heavy tight end, run it off tackle offense. It's still going to be spread and hurry up and wide open. Do you think that's more Nick Saban understanding who he has in Jalen Hurts and that's the best situation for him? Or has he maybe truly come into the 21st century and realized this is how we play offense these days and this is how you have to do it?
Well, I mean, I think that you would be crazy if you watched Alabama's offense last year and tried to go back to 3 yards and a cloud of dust. I mean, last year was the most productive offense Alabama has ever had or on par with the most productive that they've ever had. And it was a full-fledged spread option, three-receiver shotgun, 99% of the time offense. And, you know, that's the kind of quarterback Jalen Hurts is. It would be crazy not to continue to exploit that. I mean, to try to make Jalen Hurts into A.J. McCarron would not make any sense. I mean, especially when you have like a triple option backfield. I mean, that's how they're set up personnel-wise to run that kind of offense where, you know, they can run for 300 yards a game if they really want to. That backfield has a chance to be historically great, including Hurts, as a runner. The one question I would have just as far as their personnel, I don't know a lot about the new offensive coordinator, just because he's coming from the NFL, it's such a transition that it's very hard to say, you know, how much he's going to bring, how much he's going to change, how they're going to adapt, because he's really just coming into a different game. So I think that I really need to see them before I can say anything about how Daboll has influenced the offense. But one thing personnel-wise that I think maybe a little bit underrated is how much O.J. Howard meant to that offense and his versatility and him being, you know, as the H-back there, really one of the linchpins of what they're able to do because, I mean, he's a very effective blocker, consistent, effective blocker. And then obviously was also a threat as a receiving threat downfield. So, I mean, defense had to respect him both ways. Do they have a guy who's going to be able to do that, who can block, who can run, who can, you know, potentially stretch defenses and keep them from adding that eighth or ninth guy up in the box against the run the way that O.J. Howard did? I think that's one question to ask. But I cannot imagine them trying to make Jalen Hurts into a pocket passing quarterback. I don't think they need him to be that. It just is going to come down to, in big games against LSU in championship games and playoff games, is he going to be able to make a third and eight conversion? I mean, that's the question with Hurts. You know, I think that's where he's going to have to grow.
You were absolutely right on O.J. Howard. Just look at the decade plus that Nick Saban has been in Tuscaloosa. He has produced offensive linemen, defensive linemen, linebackers, running backs, wide receivers, corners and safeties, all of them in the first round. He's never, ever had a tight end like O.J. Howard. Running routes, blocking on the ground. He did a little bit of everything. That is a serious defection. But let's go to the other half of the Yellowhammer State and the Auburn Tigers. It's August on the plains, so of course we're hyping up another Tigers quarterback. This time it's Jarrett Stidham. I was not hook, line, and sinker for Jeremy Johnson 2 years ago. I know a lot of people were, but I am for Stidham. I have to admit, I think he's the most important addition in the entire SEC. He has the leading odds for the Heisman Trophy in the entire conference at 15-1. I think that's a little early for that prognostication, but the hype is real, and I think he totally changes what this offense can do. Did he do enough at Baylor to give you that same kind of confidence, or was that just air raid in the Big 12, throw out the numbers, they don't mean anything?
Oh, no. Absolutely. What I saw from him at Baylor gives me confidence that he can be successful. I agree completely. He's the most important addition. I think that if he is as good as I think he can be, and as you apparently think he can be, and as a lot of people think he can be, then I think Auburn is really the team that has a chance to challenge Alabama. I mean, he's the missing piece. Because, I mean, Auburn, you know, Auburn last year was pretty good. They started slow. The ending was rough. You know, they had a lot of injuries. But when they were healthy last year, they were pretty good. I mean, they were able to do what they want to do with Tedway between the tackles. Kerryon Johnson is kind of the outside threat that they've had in the past. And you look at the best teams that Malzahn's had back there, even going back to when he was the offensive coordinator, they've had that kind of thunder and lightning duo in the backfield with, you know, Dyer and Caleb and Trey Mason and who was the other running back that was there in 2013?
I'm blanking. You're throwing it at me and I'm blanking right now. I admit it.
Right. Anyway. They've got that now. They've got that with Petway. Petway was, you know, I think a revelation for them. I think that he really changed their offense. I mean, he, you know, changed the trajectory of their season last year when he emerged as their every down back. And they did all of that. You know, they went on that winning streak in midseason and did that with, you know, Sean White, the quarterback. And Sean White, you know, was a fine, reliable quarterback. I think he was clearly their best option. But, you know, he was limited, very limited as a passer and as a runner. You know, Stidham, I think, is an upgrade, certainly as a passer. I think he's probably a better athlete than people think he is. He's not going to be Nick Marshall by any means, but he's going to be the best passer that they've had there since Cam Newton. And I think when you just, again, a lot like Georgia, when you look at their young receiving core, but very talented, they're not proven yet, but they certainly have that potential. A lot of potential on defense, especially on the defensive line. They've got, you know, one of those deep defensive line 8-10 guy rotations that you really need to have to be a real contender in the SEC. You know, they have all of those pieces. If Stidham is that last piece, then I think Auburn, you know, Auburn has a chance to be as good as anybody this year. And that's an if. They don't have the, they're not proven there. But I think that they have the most potential of any team to contend with Alabama.
It was Cameron Artis Payne, by the way. I should have known that. Yeah, Trey Mason. Right, yeah. Trey Mason left in 2013. Went to the draft early, and Artis Payne actually led the SEC in rushing in 2014. The very next year, I should have known that one.
Right. Give me a second.
So if it's not Auburn, I'm high on Auburn.
Corey Grant, that's who I was going
to say. Oh, Corey Grant. Yeah, he was on that roster as well. Corey Grant and Cameron Artis Payne, correct. Yeah, so they had kind of a three-headed monster, but, you know, Mason was really the guy. But, yeah, wow, 4,600 yards on the ground for that team. And just incredible. Okay, if we're not talking the Tigers, who else in the West is potentially a threat? I think clearly Auburn is the best threat to Alabama to unseat them and make it to Atlanta. Me personally, I'm down on LSU. I'm not a fan of the quarterback position. A lot of fresh faces in the front seven, a murderous schedule. I'm down on the Bayou Bengals this year. I'm a little higher than most on Arkansas. Maybe I'm just buying another year in the system for Bielema. I love what I saw from Austin Allen. Scheme changed from 4-3 to 3-4 on defense. That's what I see. If it's not Auburn, who's it going to be to potentially threaten the Crimson Tide?
Well, I mean, I understand. I'm kind of with you on LSU. I do. If it's not Auburn, then it has to be LSU. I mean, just the talent level that team has. I think that they're the team every year that's going to be a possible contender. I don't think Arkansas has that. I do like Austin Allen. I think he was underrated, but I'm not really sure what else Arkansas has that would make me think they can make a jump to being a 10-win team. Raleigh Williams is gone. I know Devil Whaley is probably going to be a pretty good replacement there, but I don't see the skill talent. I don't see the defense there for Arkansas to really to be significantly better than they've been. LSU, I don't know. The thing that gives me confidence with LSU is Matt Canada, the coordinator hire. I thought he did a great job at Pitt last year. You look at their games. Against, especially the big wins they had over Penn State and Clemson. He kind of was the star of those games. I mean, the offense was very creative. Lots of jet sweeps and running back wheels and shovel passes and a lot of that kind of stuff, which, you know, people say is gimmicky stuff, but even the threat of some of that stuff really opened up the bread and butter that they had, because they had a great running back with James Conner, who was, you know, very effective between the tackles. He's got that again with Darius Geis, obviously. Quarterback is an issue, but, he turned Nathan Peterman last year into a draft pick. I mean, do you remember Nathan Peterman at Tennessee?
I do, and it wasn't too pretty.
That guy transferred to Pitt, and last year was one of the most efficient passers in the country and got drafted. So I think that, you know, Danny Etling can do enough. I mean, he may not be a draft pick, but I think he can do enough for within that offense for LSU to be successful. And again, because they can play defense. Dave Aranda was a great hire for them last year. The defense was as advertised. I don't think that they need a whole lot more from the offense. And there were times last year also, I'd say, that the offense looked great. It's against some of the lesser teams on the schedule, but it wasn't just like they just pounded them. I mean, they came out against Missouri, against Ole Miss in a couple of games and just looked awesome.
Texas Arkansas game, too.
Yeah, I mean, they were explosive on a few occasions. They have that potential. They're going to have to win low-scoring games, but, you know, I think LSU, to me, always is going to have that potential. I would agree that I would trust Auburn more than LSU, just because for the same, you know, LSU, again, has underachieved too often. But I still think that potential is there. I like Canada. I think that's a good hire. So, you know, LSU has a chance.
Thankfully, we're only about a week and a half from toe finally meeting leather. As we talked about earlier in the show, an incredible week one of action in the SEC and outside, quite frankly. But I want to talk about the five neutral site matchups in the best league in America. This should be a lot of really fun to watch. Let's kind of go through them quickly, one at a time. One that's not getting a lot of pub, but NC State and South Carolina at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. Sort of an interesting matchup. The Wolfpack, one of those sneaky teams that might make things a little funky in the ACC. I'm high on South Carolina because I love the skill position talent. What do you see with the matchup there?
I think that's going to say a lot for South Carolina about where they are. And about how competitive they're going to be in that division. NC State, I think you're right, they're kind of a borderline top 25 team. You look at them last year, they should have beaten Clemson. I mean, they had a chip shot field goal to beat Clemson, which would have knocked Clemson out of the playoff and missed it and wound up losing it overtime. You know, they almost beat Florida State. I mean, NC State's a pretty solid program there. I think a lot of people see them this year as that this is the year that they really make that move under Dave Doran and really start winning some of those games. They're going to start out as kind of a borderline top 25 team, so that's going to tell us a lot about where South Carolina is coming into the year, how far they've come, how competitive are they going to be. Because NC State is probably about on the level of Tennessee, maybe Florida. That's about how good NC State is, I think. So how South Carolina fares against them is going to be a good indicator of how they're going to do in the division, I think.
Speaking of Florida, the Gators will open at Jerry World in Arlington, AT&T Stadium, against Michigan. Clearly, the Wolverines are a big brand, but they lose 10 starters on defense, including an irreplaceable guy like Jabril Peppers. We're finally going to see if Coach Harbaugh can get his own guys to win games as opposed to Brady Hoke's. So, and again, Florida has a lot of questions to answer. We don't know what's happening at quarterback. There seems to be a new name thrown out as a potential starter every day. You like the offensive line more. You like the receiving core more. But how much talent can possibly be replaced off of one defense year after year? And that's what's gotten the Gators to Atlanta. What do you see in that game outside of Dallas?
Yeah, well, you know, Michigan lost all those starters on defense last year, but I would still trust Michigan's defense, I think, more than I would trust Florida's.
Interesting.
Right now going into that game, just because Florida lost about as much. And I think that the guys that they have moving into the new roles are less proven than the new guys that Michigan has, or you know, have maybe less of a ceiling. The one guy I'm looking forward to watching for Florida who's getting a lot of hype is Jabari Zuniga, who's their new pass rusher at defensive end. I think he kind of flashed a little bit. Not a major recruit, but he did flash a little bit last season. Had a big spring. There's a lot of hype for him coming in, even more so than C.C. Jefferson, who's been there and was a five-star recruit. Zuniga seems to be the guy that they're really looking to break out and kind of continue their tradition of major pass rushers there. But, you know, again, with Florida, the question is always going to come back to the quarterback. I guess we're assuming that Malik Zaire is going to be the starter. I think that there was maybe he was a little bit overhyped considering he made four career starts at Notre Dame. So there's not really a lot backing him up as a grad transfer. He still seems like the best option to me going forward, but you have the same question marks around them that you've had for the past several years.
Let's keep it in the Lone Star State, your neck of the woods. BYU and LSU, another sort of sneaky matchup, NRG Stadium in Houston. The BYU did beat Mississippi State last year. Granted, that was in Provo, one of those funky road trips for an SEC team. But LSU better not sleep on the Mormons, because that's a team that could sneak up and bite you.
Oh, yeah. That game reminds me a lot of LSU's opener against Wisconsin
sure.
last year. I mean, you know, BYU is a solid program. I remember, I guess it was years ago now, that they upset Oklahoma in an opener. They've upset Nebraska recently in an opener. You know, BYU has consistently shown an ability to win this kind of game. As a program, they have a very good quarterback, Tanner Mangum. I think they can challenge LSU. And if LSU's offense is not, if LSU's offense really hasn't taken that step forward, I mean, if they come out and look like they looked against Wisconsin last year, then you know, BYU has a very good chance of pulling that game out.
That's
another game where we're going to really see, like, how far has LSU come? How much does that new offense mean? And it's not just going to be, you know, in the margin of victory. I mean, that could be the difference in winning and losing that game.
All right, this is actually the second of two games on opening weekend at the brand-new Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, but Monday Night Football is going to be Georgia Tech in Tennessee. Scary matchup for the Volunteers. That offense that Georgia Tech runs is just – it gives everybody fits. I don't care who you are. I'm a Florida State guy. I've seen enough of the Yellow Jackets. That triple option is a nightmare. Fortunately, Coach Jones gets the entire offseason and prepare for it instead of 4 or 5 days. Again, these are a couple of sort of borderline top 25 teams. Who knows what the expectations are? Should be a fun matchup in a pseudo home game for the Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, well, I always love watching Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech is one of those teams where they're kind of the same team every single year. Now, they did just lose their leading rusher from last year, the fullback Mills, who was just a freshman last year but led the team in rushing. But me, every running back at Georgia Tech is the same. They haven't had a 1,000-yard running back at Georgia Tech since 2010, but they still finish in the top 10 every year because they spread the ball around. That offense is just a machine, and the parts are pretty interchangeable. So with Georgia Tech, you get Georgia Tech, and you know, from one year to the next, there's not going to be a whole lot of difference. It's just a matter of how prepared are you for that offense? You know, how disciplined are you? How well do you stick to your assignments in that? That's always an answer when you're playing Georgia Tech.
And, of course, we have to wrap up shop with Florida State and Alabama. This might be the biggest opening game in the history of college football. Number one, Alabama against number three, Florida State. It wouldn't surprise a lot of people if this is the precursor to a rematch in the college football playoff. Both teams look positively loaded. You have to look very deep to find a flaw in either squad. Who do you give the nod to about a week and a half before we get going?
Well, I think you have to go with Alabama. They're the defending champs. I think Florida State has big questions on the offensive line. I mean, DeAndre Francois, their quarterback, just took a beating last year. Every time
big
you
time.
Watched him in a big game, I mean, he got pounded. And, you know, he didn't get hurt. He kept getting up. He was very tough. I think that he has some of the same problems, the same questions of inconsistency himself, if the protection is there. I'll tell you, I like Florida State has a freshman running back coming in, Cam Akers, who I saw a couple of times. He is from the same hometown where my parents now live. I got to see his last couple of high school games. That guy is for real. That guy is worth the hype. I think he has a chance to start right away for Florida State. I think he's number one running back, number two overall player in the country. I really am looking. He's a difference maker right away. And even on a roster as talented as Florida State, I'm really looking forward to seeing how he fares. He's going up against Alabama, so you know you temper your expectations a little bit. But I'm really looking forward to seeing him run and to his career. But unless he's the next coming of Herschel Walker, I think Alabama is the obvious favorite in that game. But you're right about it being the biggest game. I do have both of those teams in the playoff at the end of the year. So, hopefully we'll live up to the hype.
Yeah, welcome to college football, Cam Akers. That's a hell of a first assignment, huh?
Yeah.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for joining me. I hope we can do it again real soon, okay?
Oh, yeah. Be great. Thanks.
Okay, that was Matt Hinton, everybody. You can see his work all season long at Saturday Down South. Remember to follow him on Twitter as well, at Matt R. Hinton. And thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. A special thanks to our friends at WDAE in Tampa, as well as our sponsor, TicketCity.com. If you like what you heard, you can subscribe on iTunes and all the other services out there. Be sure to give us a rating as well. My name is John Crist, and for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.